In the places that we went, I guess it was an education for a child in those days before television. We traveled to many places in the United States. We were stationed in many places in the United States, including Texas and Kansas, wherever there were cavalry posts. We went to Hawaii and we were stationed in Hawaii on two different occasions, the last of which I graduated from a little high school on the island of Oahu. That's where Honolulu is. I graduated from a little school called Leilahua, which means heavenly flower. While I was there as a high school student, I had always been interested in art, and going back to some of the other schools that I had attended back here in what they call the States, in the United States, I had always worked in art whenever I could, and writing with school annuals, school yearbooks. And I worked my way up through three high schools to working on annual staff, so I finally got to Leilahua in Hawaii and became the art editor for their yearbook. I'm mentioning that because there mustn't have been much competition, but I entered a contest in art, which was put on by the Royal Academy of Fine Arts in Honolulu, and was fortunate enough to win the scholarship to the Royal Academy of Fine Arts. I was very interested for two reasons. One was they used me in a small teaching capacity, which I really didn't think I was qualified for, but they must have thought I was. And that was working primarily with small elementary children who had, in one way or another, had come to the academy hoping to gain some knowledge in art. I had a lot of free time to study in the academy, and I was always interested in that. I don't know if this is the kind of thing you're interested in. After having left the island, I came back with my family. I wanted to stay there. A beautiful place, as people know. More people travel there now know that. But it was not the intelligent thing to do for me to stay there, really, because I wanted to go to university. And I could have gone to University of Hawaii, where my sister had just graduated from. But it was wise for me to return with my family. I think people should do that when you're still in those formative years. And I came back to one of the military bases here in the United States and took a competitive examination to go to Pennsylvania State University. I am glad I did that. And I'm delighted that they accepted me as a student. And after graduation from Pennsylvania State University, I was, like many people, immediately told that I was to be a member of the United States Armed Forces. Now, this was the year before World War II started, and I held a lieutenant's commission from the ROTC program that I'd been involved with Pennsylvania State University. And I was whisked off in many capacities in the armed forces. That is not unique for me. It was true for many, many, many young people. And I was an infantry commander of a company and so forth. And there are so many people who have been involved in this that it's hardly worth mentioning. But after the World War II was over, I still remained in the armed forces and remained there for a while. And then I came to Bel Air. I had met my wife at Pennsylvania State University. She was a Pilesville, Harford County girl, Virginia Lowe, in Virginia Kendall. And we were married while I was in the armed forces. We have two lovely children. They're both school teachers here in Harford County. Well, I correct that. My daughter is the art teacher for the Perryville High School over across Susquehanna River. And my our son, Jack Kendall, is the art, one of the art teachers, I believe he's the head of the art department for Falston High School. My wife taught in the elementary school at Churchill under the principal, mostly under the principalship of Thomas Packett, who, as far as I'm concerned, I believe he's still alive and lives in Churchill. Is there anything that that you would be primarily interested in?
Oh, all this is quite fine, I mean.
Is it?
Yeah.
It seems a little boring to me, but it might be of interest. I had graduated in journalism from Pennsylvania State University. And advertising. I graduated, majored in journalism, and minored in advertising. I think I was not unlike many students. I hadn't truly grasped what it was I might like to do, but I did. I'm sorry to say it might not make some people happy, but I did enjoy the armed forces. I finally got a majority in the armed forces, you know, and that's fine. Anyway, but going back to the other, I had graduated in journalism, and I had had an opportunity to try to see if there was anything that I might do in along the journalistic line. It was interesting, I think, that I found myself working in research development at Edward Arsenal, a chemical research post, which is now in the recruiting room. And I was doing a lot of writing. Maybe this had something to do with it, I don't know. But I did a reasonable amount of writing for them in various capacities. And during the time that I was involved in this, I wanted to do a little on my own, for my own personal enjoyment, and I thought I had done some watercolors of the Maryland-Pennsylvania Railroad, which might have led to this undeserved award. But when I think of I'll digress a little bit and say, well, I remember when there was a story that Jack Benny is alleged to have said in answer to one of his friends who, after Jack Benny had received a nice award, like the one that this county presented to me, and he said to Mr. Benny, "Do you really believe you deserve this award?" And he said, "No, but I have arthritis and I don't deserve it either." So I feel that way. I feel that way when I have been given awards, which I wonder about. Well, going back to journalism, I decided that I would like to do some watercolors of the railroad stations on the Maw and Paw Railroad, as is fondly known by most people, Maryland, Pennsylvania. And after having done some of them, and I sold one to the PTA and students and teachers, they all got together at Churchill, of the Bel Air Railroad Station. And I thought there just might be an interest on the part of all Harford Countyans. I didn't care too much about what Pennsylvania thought. I thought, well, maybe all Harford Countyans might be interested in the railroad. And with no other alternative in mind, really, I decided to do this. And I spent the better part of 3 years roaming up and down the railroad, which was 70 some miles long. the railroad had just gotten into the stage where it was going to cease in existence, at least in our Harford County and Baltimore County area. It was still running freight cars, but no passengers in Pennsylvania. And I thought, wouldn't it be maybe an interesting thing? How does one know when one decides to do a little book? Might be interesting to people to see the variety of railroad stations that are on this railroad and are so symbolic of American railroading in the United States. Always as a child, going back to some of those days when I said I was being taken around along with my sister in the armed forces with my mother and father, I had always enjoyed riding on the train. And I always didn't realize at the time, I was always interested in these quaint old railroad stations, and I was crazy about them. So with something like this in mind, I decided that it wouldn't be enough to do the watercolors of all the stations, but I needed some catalyst, something that would not help me sell the pictures, that was the farthest from my mind, but something that would help people to say there is a relationship between the railroad station per se and the life that was around the railroad and these stations. And I thought it would be rather unique to look at it from that point of view. So I did both. I wrote about it in first person as though I was with a group of people and we were riding the railroad and we stopped at all these stations and we would look at the stations and we would talk about the stations and then we would get on the train. This is all fiction on my part, except I think it was real in that we were talking about it as true railroad and a true existing station. During my, if you might call it, research of the railroad, I had many pleasant experiences. I met many people along the railroad. I talked to them at great length about their relationship to the railroad in their community. Met many, many interesting people who had some relationship to their family. Their family had, in the men especially, had many times been conductors or had worked on the railroad. And in some cases wanted to know whether I was someone who was getting ready to start the railroad up. And I thought that was interesting because I certainly didn't, in my mind, look like a person who was doing about starting up a railroad. But they were that interested in the railroad per se. Then there were those people who were willing to give me information, but they told me something interesting. They said, you know, a lot of people have come by and they've asked us questions about the railroad, but they never do anything about it. We've never heard any more about it or anything. And I returned to these people after I published the book, The Mon Paul Vanishing Railroad, which your library could have a copy or two. And I showed it to them and gave them, the people who had helped me along the railroad, I gave them a copy. I never had any idea in my mind, because I was reminded by the publisher that I might never sell any of them. I didn't have any idea that I would. I truly didn't. I hoped that I might, but I thought, this is not really an ego trip on my part. I still clung to the idea that there might be those people who would cherish the memory of this railroad. And even though I was a so-called newcomer to Harford County, I was one time reminded of that by someone who had belonged, they said, to the early 400 of Harford County, that I would never be a true Harford County. But I believe in my heart that I am a Harford Countyan and love the county very much. And I found out that as soon as I made the book available, it for some reason, was accepted by the community. I think even the publisher was surprised, because he said normally one doesn't sell a book like that to only his relatives, a few friends, and some sympathetic souls who know you labored over it. But that was a pleasant surprise. I don't know, this may not be of any interest to you, but I believe that because of my interest in the county and my interest in the railroad and what it meant to the people, the farmers, the people who resided along the railroad, the people whose livelihood depended on the railroad, like C. Milton Wright, who wrote our book, Our Harvard Heritage, and was very helpful. He and his daughter, when I was writing this book, said that he had gotten on the train on numerous occasions from Bel Air and had gone to Baltimore for various business reasons and in return seemed to be excited about the fact that I was doing this. And that gave me a big boost, because here was a person who really was one of substance. I don't mean money, but I mean a learned past superintendent of schools in Harvard County that would think that. And that gave me great encouragement as a person trying to struggle with this book. And I appreciated that very much, and I still do. I looked on that friendship with him and even today with his daughter as probably being one of the biggest boosts for me. Another person who was a big boost for me in regard to this was Mr. Donald Preston, the Preston statesman. So he said, "You can do it, and I'll help you in my store by having the book there." I have honored a handshake with Mr. Preston and now his son over 13 or more years since I published the book, and I have sold copies of my watercolors there just on a gentleman's agreement that I would sell them there. I thought that's rather unique in today's world, where you sign pages and pages of all kinds of contracts, right? That we would have this old-fashioned gentleman's agreement that this is what I would do. Like Jack Benny said, I've had other things that have come my way that I have just felt that I didn't deserve, but that I appreciate, because there are so many deserving people around that never seem to have the recognition. Some of them, I guess, after they're gone, recognize. But I was asked by the Bel Air, what would you call it, the Centennial Committee, if I wouldn't write a chapter for their book. I have it over here. And in that book, I'm showing to you, I'm sure there's a copy of this book in the library. I wrote the chapter on transportation. And if you notice, the cover is my watercolor of the Bel Air station.
Very nice.
Yeah. I thought that was nice that the Bel Air Centennial Committee would ask me to do this. And the privilege of writing the one chapter on transportation. I guess they did this because they thought the railroad had some relationship to this. It certainly did when it came along, but there were many other things I thought that were important in transportation. And I did a lot of research and enjoyed doing that. Not necessarily in the same order, but they decided to have a walking tour. Walking tour Harford County, and I'll show you this pamphlet. And they asked me to illustrate the walking tour. And that's the little pamphlet that they came up with, and I did all the illustrations in that. This was an idea of trying to promote the scenic parts of Harford County, and we did it as though one would go around and walk through all these areas and get a chance to drink in the flavor of this beautiful county and to meet people who were likewise interested in the historical aspects of the county. So I illustrated that for them, and they
quite nice.
And again, not necessarily in the same order, but the Egypt decided to come up with what they call Harford to look back. That's this booklet. And they asked me, among many other more important people, like Mary Hall, everybody knows Mary Hall, but they asked me to, would I write the chapter on the railroad? And I considered that an honor, and I did that, and I'll present this one to you if you want to see it. Give me a summary. I might ask you a question if you want.
Also, when you're doing your research for your book on the Marlin Farm, can you maybe describe some of the people you said you had talked to about the railroad?
Yes. Oh, sure. One that comes to mind was I talked to a lady. I wish I could give you her name, but I can't. I'd have to be looked back in my notes. I talked to a lady in up in a little town called Felton, Pennsylvania. And the picture of that railroad station is in my book. I'll show you that. I'm showing you so many things.
Very interesting.
All right, now this is my book on the railroad, and I have her in this picture. She's standing over here on the right-hand side, along with my daughter and her husband, and I drew them, and while I drew this, these things. Over on this left side of the railroad, she lived over there on that side. If she's still alive, she was in her 90s then, and that's been 13 or 14 years ago. I asked her if she'd always lived here, and she said yes. She said, I always lived here. My uncle worked on the railroad, and he was a station agent. And she said, I moved once in my life. I moved to the house next door. And I thought that was rather interesting. And she said, as a little girl, that she always listened to the railroad at night. And those tracks to her was an escape from her little community. She thought, you know, I could get on that train and go anywhere. And it, to her, was like keeping in touch with the world as a little girl. And I thought that was kind of interesting, that she did that. Also, she told me, and I didn't use, as a good journalist, I should have gotten another source for this, but I believed her, because I find that when people get in the golden age of life, at least my experience has been, they don't lie or don't intend to prevaricate. I guess it's a nicer word, prevarication. They tell you right out what they think. It may be good or may be bad. And she said that, as far as she was concerned, the railroad was the really important industry, you might call it, in her community. It kept the livelihood. You kept them, everything wrapped around the railroad. In other words, we know that there was farming around, the delivering of milk and receiving goods on the railroad, traveling on it as an individual. This was a very primary part of their life. And she told me that the station was used for a picture that they made of Abraham Lincoln in Gettysburg. Now, I don't know whether people in Gettysburg would particularly appreciate this, but I put it in my book, so it's there in black and white, that a committee had come to Felton, talked to people like herself, and asked them, would they mind, and the railroad people, if they put the sign Gettysburg on their station, and if they would dress in period clothes of the days of the Civil War. And so they all got in the spirit of this thing, and they did that. And out of the railroad museum somewhere, they brought a Lincoln-era train in, and the actor stands on the back of the train, as supposedly he did, I guess. And it was pictured then as his arrival, Lincoln's arrival, prior to having given the Gettysburg Address. And we know that he arrived by train. And so the little Felton station was then used, because it was more unique, more picturesque. It looked more like it might have been than to have gone to Gettysburg and used what they had in Gettysburg. I don't know if people in Gettysburg would like this, but that's neither here nor there. That's what they did. I thought that was interesting. Another place, when I sit down to make a watercolor or a draw at this place, do the sketch, I'm there a little while. Although I paint rather quickly, I'm usually there a while, and I like to go around and talk to the people. I especially like to tell them what it is I'm doing. I find that to be unique. If I don't do that, sometimes people might get in touch with the law and say, somebody's doing something down here, making notes or something, and we don't know what this is all about. Well, I was working down in the Vale area, where there used to be an old trestle. And the Vale station is still there. It's a private residence. And some of the freight buildings are still there. And a gentleman came out of one of the freight buildings where he was living, and he said, well, at last, somebody's going to do something about restoring this area. And if you'd been down in Vale and take a look, it would be a big job, because I think there are only a few stones left from the trestle ending building. But he was that excited about it. He thought I was going to do something, surely do something about the railroad. I met the president of the railroad through my research, and he was very nice. He was very cooperative. And he asked me if I wanted to, I could come up to the main station, and he would open a safe. Nothing about money here, but open a safe where they had their archives, and that I was welcome to look at anything that he had. I thought that was nice. That was in some of my personal interviews. And I felt that I ought to do something for him. I didn't have any money to give to anybody. I still don't. So I thought, well, I'll do a watercolor, another watercolor, not the one in the book, of two stations. One, he was a station master at Boston prior to being made president of the railroad in New York. So I did a picture of York Station Point and the one at Boston, and he liked that, and I gave that to him and his family. I met him some years later, and I asked him, did you tear it up? Oh, no, we still have it. So that was rather interesting. I'm still trying to stay on the question that you asked me.
Well, that's quite all right.
Yeah, the people that I had met while I was doing the research. The weather wasn't always kind to me, and some of my watercolors show that they were done in the wintertime. I did the station at Bridgeton. I'll show you in the book. This station I did in the wintertime, you might tell. Looks more wintery. The snow's on the ground and everything. And I don't know what it is. There are people who might make up things about premonition. Maybe there's some truth to premonition. I've never studied that. I'm not smart enough to do that, I guess. But I had some insatiable desire to go up there right away and do that watercolor of that station. I don't know what prompted me to do it, but I went up there anyway, right away, and I did it even though it was wintertime, and that would have been much more delightful to do it in the summertime. But winter comes too, you know, as well as summer, and it would be a natural thing for me to do the station in the snow. About 2 weeks after I did the watercolor, one of the natives wrote to me, included an article out of the York paper reminding me that that station had been burned to the ground. Mm-hmm. Isn't that something? There are people who probably write volumes about what prompted one to go up there and do that before that happened. Now, my daughter will tell you, well, that's nothing new. anything my father did when he painted old barns or anything. He says after a while they fell over, so I don't know whether there's any truth there or not. But
so what are some of your other experiences working on the railroad? Not just the people, like you're just saying about the station that had burned down. What other experiences did you have, such as that, or any type of experience with your painting?
Well, I met a Mr. McLaughlin, who was an engineer. At the time I interviewed him, his eyesight was very poor, and he was well along in the autumn years of life. Lived in Delta, Pennsylvania, and was an engineer on the railroad, on a number of their locomotives. He was such an interesting person in so many ways. And he too reminded me that people had had often said they were going to do something in regard to the railroad. They'd ask him all kinds of questions, but he never saw anything come of it. But I sat there listening to him recount stories, which I cannot prove, but I have to assume were true, because he's the one that experienced them, and I didn't. And I got him signed. I don't, maybe not this book, but I got him to sign in another book next to a locomotive that he'd been engineer. And he told me lots of interesting stories about the railroad. As I say, I have no proof except that I do believe Mr. McLaughlin told me the truth. So I put them in my book, and you can read about those experiences in the book. One of them said that he told me that no one had been killed on the railroad who was a passenger in all the years the railroad existed, and that's in the 1800s as well as the 1900s. I thought that's rather unique, but there were people killed, sorry to say. I guess would happen on any railroad, men who worked on the railroad. But they really had, truly over the years, had few reported accidents where the person was killed. And he told about having, you can't stop one of these big locomotives in the long distance, everyone knows that, because it still happens today. The man walking on a trestle, and he blew the horn, he did everything, made all the noise he could make, but he couldn't do anything about it. That's sad. Stories like that aren't really the kind of thing you like to think about. And he also told me something funny. He said that there were people who were afraid to ride the trestle, which people commonly call the steering trestle. It's on the cover of my book, but the true name for it was the growth trestle, but people like to call it the steering trestle. And he said that there were people who would come out from Baltimore, and they'd want to ride this train, and they would ride, that would be in Forest Hill, and they would ride out as far as the Forest Hill station, but they wouldn't go over that trestle, so they'd get on the southbound train to go home. Actually scared. Then there were people who came to the rocks to enjoy their summer vacation, and they stayed in this hotel that I remember very well, and it burned down sometime afterwards. And they would come out from Baltimore and spend the summer in the rocks, living in that hotel. And it was always full of people who were traveling out from Baltimore and enjoyed their vacation in the rocks. And I tell about that in the book too, I think. Dr. Van Bibber, George Van Bibber, was one of our people that everybody knew when I came to the community. I guess George Van Bibber is well known among historians and other people because he himself is a historian. I believe our county symbol that we use was George. He's the one that designed that. George told about his father riding Model T Ford, and that for some reason, every now and then, he would miss the train in Bel Air. Didn't get there in time to get on the train. And he'd drive his Model T Ford as fast as he could down to Vail Station, and wait at Vail Station for the train to come, so he could leave his Ford there and get on the train at the Vail Station. And I believe George had told me the truth on that. It was George's poem on the railroad that I asked him if I could use part of his poem, and he told me that I certainly could. And on the last part of the book, there's George's poem, part of his poem on the railroad, and I thought it was a fitting tribute to railroading, especially the sound of the railroad going, especially at night when you hear the whistle and everything. There was certain romance that people have attached anyway to this kind of railroad, and George let me use that in my book. And all I offered him for that was the book. I didn't have anything else of it, so I have it in there.
Quite nice.
Yeah. Mr. Hackett, I told you earlier, who was my wife's principal at Churchville School, told me when I did the watercolor of Churchville, you know, but Bel Air Station, that he never remembered it looking as good as that. I don't go into the details on that, but apparently these weren't always sparkling representatives of some of our architecture, you know, from the weather and I gather there wasn't time or money to spend on scrubbing them down, so he said I had it looking real sharp and nice, so that it really was a grass-looking building. And I said, well, it's the way it looked to me, and I decided to do it that way. I think the personality that spoke to me. One of the past superintendents of school, told me one time I came out of something where there had been a meeting of a lot of teachers, although I'm not an educator, but I must have gone there with my wife. And Willis, I believe, Superintendent Willis, said to me, you know, John, I appreciate the fact that you did this, because I've had so many people say that they're going to write a book, and they never do. And he said, you never said you were going to write a book, and you did it. And he said, that's a little different than I used to hear from so many other people. He said, I wish some of the people who said they were going to write a book would go and start writing and get it done and stop telling me about it. I thought that was nice coming from the superintendent of school. Anything else along that line or any other line?
As you were a teacher, what type of things did you do for the school system?
Oh, I wasn't a teacher. My wife was a teacher. You mean, what did I do for the school system?
Oh, yeah, so I must have.
You misunderstood. Now, my wife was a school teacher, and I have met these people in education through her relationship, because she past president of the retired teachers and so forth, and has always been involved in education as a school teacher. And maybe you thought that I was not. But I met these people through the association with her. Stepping Stones Museum, I have always been interested in it to help them in any fashion that I might along the artistic line, what I might do for them if they wanted such help. And I appreciate the fact that they asked me early on if I wouldn't help them in many capacities that had to relate to some of the artistic things that were necessary. It's been a great association for me to have been working with the people in Stepping Stones, from the founder, Mr. Bull, on to, and his wife, Harriet, and others. And up to the present museum. Everyone knows, I'm sure, that Stepping Stone Museum didn't start out there. It started out in another area in our Harford County, but the county government through their Parks and Recreation, I believe, for the foresters, have permitted them to be over on their land at Stepping Stone. Well, they still call themselves the Seventh Son of Judea, but I believe it's another name, Susquehanna State Park. And they still ask me, and I'm glad, I'm delighted at my age that they would ask me to do things for them along that line. And there I have, at different times, gone up to entertain children by drawing, you know, cartoons and things like that. I have done note paper for them, which they're sold in their gift shop, or offered to sell anywhere in the gift shop. I hope they sold them for their own benefit. Recently, I gave them a watercolor that they could hope to gain some money in an auction that might help them out. They always need help financially because it's a tough road, and they're all volunteers, and they give much, much more of their time than I do. But I appreciate the fact that they ask me to help them out when I can. And I've done that over the years. Thanks to their having asked me and me being willing to do it. Yeah. I'm now also working with the Historical Society. And they asked what we would like, my wife and I both belong, and they asked me, what would I like to do, and what do you think I would like to do? I said, well, I think that I could help you from a journalism point of view. If you'd like me to do any of the covers or any of the illustrations in your magazine or whatever you'd like. And I haven't seen one, the one yet, but the next one coming out will have a watercolor I did for them of the station in Boston that they're going to. They told me they're going to use on the cover of the next Historical Society book. There are people who work hard than I do at that, and they would be commended. They've worked hard on that. The people that I have met and known who work with them, like Dr. David Hodge and others, and I appreciate them. I can't even come in the shadow of the work that they've done for Harford County with the Historical Society. I can only make what small contribution I can along the right line. But it's a great county. I hope the people that come along appreciate it as much as those of us who have the privilege of doing it. When I came here after the war, I believe there were about 52,000 people in Harford County. I believe there are more than that now. I think you might find that many in a very close proximity of Bel Air. So it was interesting to have been accepted by people. I'm reminded of another story. I told you one about Jack Benny, but I believe that Casey Stengel gets the credit for this one, if I can tell it correctly. They asked Casey, Mr. Stengel, what do you think is the most important thing when you think about your relationship with people? And he said, well, I really think the important thing is to keep the people who have made up their mind that they don't like you from the ones that are undecided. Try to keep those two apart if you can. And I think that's true. I have worked in the Harford County Boy Scouts. Harford County, a Boy Scout, and now I'm just to be, considering my time, I was also a Boy Scout. I'm going on my 38th year now. Mm-hmm. And I have been given awards in scouting that I don't deserve either, but they've given them to me, and I appreciate them. But that's not important. You can get all the awards that you want, and they don't, are not important. I think the important thing is that along the way, did anybody gain anything worthwhile from your having been working in scouting? I always feel that if one boy decides to change his life or to do something with his life or to find himself and become a better man for the experience of it, for his association with people who are trying to do something worthwhile with their lives. If you accomplish this, you may never know about it, but if you accomplish this, and I think all their pregnant years and Boy Scouting and what. And the award that they've given me, they're just nice things to hang on the wall. There's one up there, the bronze one hanging on the wall. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's only a material thing, but it's nice. It's nice that people are willing to think about that, when really the most important thing is boyhood. That's what we're really after. That's the end product. He's the one we're really trying to serve.
Mm.
And these are nice things, that you enjoy getting them, and you're somewhat elated. But then you come back to the real world and remind yourself that, like this living treasure, this is fine. I'm delighted, especially to know that in your lifetime, someone should decide for some reason or other. And I think that's nice. But it makes it keeps you on your toes, because you realize, you know, that was only yesterday. And what can I do today with my life that will enhance the county, help the county in some way, help the people in the county, help the children? Can I advance art in any way? Because that is a second love. I guess I've done what I can do in journalism, I don't know. I'm never going to write any great novels, I don't believe. That would amount to anything. But if somehow I can contribute, then I'm happy. They don't have to tell me about it. I'm happy for having been given the chance to do it. Like working in the library, I was delighted when they asked me to serve in the art committee. Well, they still do that or not, to select pictures. And they use these pictures, and you can take them out on your library card, hang them in your home.
Mm.
I was delighted when they asked me to do that. And I think that's probably maybe, I don't know, but it might be one of the reasons why I was asked to be a friend of the library. I guess, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know what the qualifications are. Maybe if I delve into the qualifications of it, I'd find out I don't qualify. Yeah, anything that you can
do. In your art, what type of techniques did you use, and techniques over the years have you seen change?
Have I seen any changes?
Oh, like in the art techniques from when you first started.
When I first started? Techniques that they're using now, you mean?
Oh, yeah, especially in the art field.
Oh, okay. Let's see. I've always been interested in all aspects of art, whether I'm participating in it myself or not. For example, if one goes to a museum and you look at pictures, do you enjoy the fact that you're there? Do you enjoy the fact that you're seeing artistic endeavor on the part of other people? Maybe you yourself aren't in any way, you think good at it or anything, but just you enjoy the work. I've always enjoyed seeing art in all capacities, all forms. I started as a watercolor, I guess I told you about being in Hawaiian Academy of Fine Arts, and I sort of thought, hey, I would like watercolor. But I didn't truly become interested in it until I went to Pennsylvania State, and I took watercolor as an elective. And it was there that I met a gentleman who was, in my mind, a Professor Chase, C-A-S-E, who was just absolutely a perfectionist when it came to being a watercolor. And I studied with him, and anything that I do right is because I listen. And my wife will tell you I don't listen very well. And anything that I don't do correctly on my watercolors, I probably forgot. I was told at one time that I forgot. And of all the mediums that I have worked with an art than watercolor. I can work in the other medium. I would have to practice a long time now because I haven't done it. But I particularly like watercolor. Because, and I have watched other watercolor. When I have, I mean, I watched their work. I haven't watched them particularly. When I first became interested in watercolor, one did not see many people involved in watercolor. There weren't very many people involved in watercolor. I met very few, if any, in watercolor. Now, you find them all over. There's many, many people involved in watercolor. Some people might ask, why do you think? You asked me about today and yesterday. Well, I have my own theories. We know that watercolor began, I won't take you through the whole history of watercolor, but watercolors were really, they really began in about 1700 and something in England. And they used it as a medium to express themselves later in oil. And this was a less expensive way in their mind of trying to capture what it is they wanted to do in oil. Some of them, like Homer, who came along later, one of our great American watercolors, worked exclusively in watercolor. He cared less about the other, although I'm sure he must have been good at the other. Maybe my art friends will argue with me on that, but I believe that he elected to be a watercolorist, and he was one of our most renowned watercolors. He worked in this medium, and when I was taught watercolor, I was taught the method used in the 1700s. Now there are many different, there are about three or four major approaches to watercolor. The one that I use is to never use white paint. Now, if you ever painted in oil or acrylic, one has a large tube of white paint always available because he or she uses the white paint to express themselves either up or down the color wheel to get a lighter or, to change the colors to either make them kind of pastel or get them, change the value of it, I guess would be the word. But a watercolor, the way that I learned was to keep the white paper available as long as you can and use the white paper to express yourselves in white wherever it is necessary. Once having put paint on the white paper, you've lost it. So you have to constantly paint in your mind way ahead of time. I try to picture the whole thing completely done before I start. That's the only way I know to do it, because I have to know how I'm going to keep the white paper to the very end. Case in point, I have watercolors here that are going to the... I didn't put them out there because you were coming. I put them out there because I'm getting ready for a show along with my daughter, who I'm sure will be the better artist, at the Maryland Golf and Country Club. And what I mean is there is no white paint anywhere on these watercolors. All the white is the white paper. So you have to think about that before you start.
Must be very hard to just imagine something like that.
Now here's one of Stepping Stone's museums, which is the old blacksmith shop. And if you look at it, you'll see all the white paper has been left. So you get the feeling of the snow and everything. You cannot, as a watercolor, using the style that I use, come back and do anything about that white if you don't save it for use when you really need it. There's a Harford County barn. And you gotta use the white paper to enhance the barn, to dry the brush quickly across there to get a feeling of snow going into the wood.
Quite an interesting
thing. And I have always been interested in watercolor. I taught a non-credit course at the college for a while until I got involved in going to places that were had to be at the same time I'd be teaching, so I had to give that up. And I'm delighted now to know that many, many people are working in Waterford, when it used to be a rather scarce unit. When I was a young boy coming along, I had a natural desire to draw and later to paint. But it was not a popular thing, although I told you about Winslow Homer. You didn't go to school when I was a child to be an artist. You went to school to learn the important subjects. Hear people talking about, you know, reading and writing and arithmetic, quote unquote. But I was always interested in drawing, and you kind of had to hide it under the barrel, if you like this kind of thing. I don't know what Winslow Homer's life was like, but I'm sure he found himself a bit of a loner when it came to working in Waterford. So I'm delighted when you ask me about today's art. They teach it in school. They have terrific teachers. We have Mr. Elston in our county, who's a terrific watercolor, and others. And it's just interesting to me, and I'm so glad that there are people who have finally recognized this medium and have gone with it and have tried to do something about it in their own way. I was selected to be a member of the Baltimore Watercolor Society, but I must say I haven't done a lot with them because geographically it's difficult for me to take a bunch of paintings and go down to Baltimore and enter them in shows. I have in a couple of occasions, but I really ought to more often than I do, but I don't. I should, but I don't. And I find I'm pretty busy along that line, just trying to keep up with what I do here for myself and for the county. And one of the restaurants teaching my work now, Tollgate Restaurant, out by Montgomery Wood, I think. That's very nice that they chose to do that. So, that's nice. They asked me to do that, and I appreciate it. I didn't go knocking on the door, begging. Because I'm a little bashful when it comes to that. I think the watercolor that I'm working on today is the best one. And the one that I worked on yesterday, I think it's horrible. But I think if I were a writer, I would want to keep that always in front of me. But maybe what I'm writing today is better than what I wrote yesterday. And it might have some value where I didn't think what I did yesterday was so great. I guess.
Well, just over your course of living in the county, what old changes have you seen overall?
Which line?
Oh, just any particular line, such as
in the county?
Oh, yes.
Well, one can't move in the county very well without seeing all the buildings that are taking place, especially private residences. It's overwhelming to me. I haven't flown over it in a long time, but I think if I had that privilege to fly over it, I would probably be even more amazed than I am by just driving to Hartford County. But let's forget for a moment all the residents. I hope, when I look at these homes, I hope that in these homes there will be people interested in our county. I hope that they don't use our county for just a place to live. I think that would be disappointing. They have such a rich, I don't mean money-wise, but they have such a rich environment, such a beautiful environment in Hartford County, that if they want to and will become a part of it, I think there's just no bottom of the barrel as to where we can go in Hartford County. If those people choose to find the county the way that I think I found it when I came here as a person who was not born in the county, I hope that they will choose to use Hartford County in that fashion, that they will work in the library, that they will help rather than criticize. Constructive criticism is necessary. That they will want to become members of the historical society. That they will care about how our county began and why it existed and what things were accomplished. That there was something up here north of Baltimore which was really important to the history of our country and to some of our religious factors that certainly started here in Hartford County, such as the Methodist Church in Abingdon. We knew there was a college there. I hope that these people will find the county worth something more than just living in. That I will never know. I will never know that. That'll have to be up to individuals. When I looked at other developments around the county, I hate to see our farm in the northern part of our county going. I guess my parents were, when they grew up, they were farm people. Of course, 80% of the people were farm people way back when they were turn of the century, when they were children. I hate to see our farm going. If you drive up in North Hartford right now, with all of the building and everything, you'll still find some delightful farms. I never pass one of those farms that I don't think it'll be a shame for Hartford County when we need to go. And I'm sure there'll be some nice people that will live there. That's fine, but I hate to see that happen. We have some beautiful farms, some beautiful farm country up in North Hartford and up to there and around the Churchill area and out to the western part, out in Garrettsville, Pike, and all out to there. And I have watched those farms over the years. I've seen many of them taken over by real estate and so forth. But they're still there, and there's still a lot of them there. And the plight of the farmer has been one which has always been close to me because of my wife hadn't been born in a family that lived on a Hartford County farm, and my own people being farm people. So I see that in Hartford County. Transportation, I don't think we have a problem that I see in transportation. I'm kind of excited about this new little round-the-town bus. I hope that keeps going, because there will be senior citizens, if they ever grasp that, the meaning of that. I think the town has been a wonderful thing. I hope that over there by across from the restaurant, where is it, across from McDonald's. There's one cow left in that gentleman's little farm. I don't know if you ever noticed it, never, a young person, but not too few people have come to our county that have mentioned the fact that it was quite an exciting thing to see a bustling community such as we have, especially when 5 o'clock comes and you're on one of the streets, to see the old cow out in the pasture just chewing away. And there used to be two of them, now there's one. Well, someday that will pass, and that'll be a sad moment. I think that's rather unique to have a cow right in the acreage right in the community. That's just a little mellow thought that I have. I was saying about transportation. As long as there's gasoline available, I guess we all feel pretty independent when it comes to transportation. But we do have a bus line pass through, and Aberdeen has access to trains as well as buses. And one can go to many places other than automobiles to this kind of transportation. I think we have been truly blessed. There are people who probably don't think so, but I think we've been truly blessed to have two major military establishments, although they're both Aberdeen Proving Ground now, but to have both Edgewood and Aberdeen involved in two large installations for our military. Being an Army brat and having been in the armed forces myself, I naturally feel that that's a very important part of our heritage for Hartford County. And I would like the people of Hartford County to appreciate the fact that the military really tries to bend over backward to be accepted in the community. And it's hard. It's hard for the military to do that. It's not always easy. And there are so many people whose livelihood depends on them, and there are so many of our people who do work at Avenue Hill. And I it's interesting to me that here I am 71 years old, and I go out there and I'm like a little kid. When I go out on the Army base, I feel at home. Because when I was younger, that's where I lived, on Army base. I just feel at home. I feel as though someone just kind of, you know, took in hand and say, hey, you're home. And I doubt if there are many people who feel that way because they were not born and raised in the military like I was. And I appreciate those two establishments and what I believe they have brought to our council for the betterment of our county. Oh, there are people who say right now, I know, that they're concerned, and they should be. But if you stop to think about it, if you think about an airline, the guy who wants to get home is that way you want to get home is the pilot who's flying the plane. Well, it's the same thing with military people. They don't want anything to be detrimental to their health or to their livelihood. It's as much, if not more, than you do because they're working in the environment. So if I were in a position to criticize, I would also like to be in a position where I could say, hey, we're fortunate to have them, let's get together. If we are not together, I don't know if we aren't. Let's get together and see what it is they are trying to do, and let's work together as a team. And I think that I appreciate the military establishment that we have.
Or is there just anything else you'd just like to add about some games or any other experiences with your book or your articles?
Well, now the book, we were asked, my wife and I, we were asked if we ever thought we'd come up with a revised edition. We made an honest attempt to do this, believing that there might be enough interest in a revised edition for us to go down and to the publisher and and take the step to revise the book. We had some very unhappy experiences with this. The company who had printed most C. Milton Wright's book, Our Harvard Heritage, and mine were the same company. And they, for various reasons, had to leave the harbor area, where they were a French Grey company. One has but to go down to the harbor, and you can see that a lot of people had to get out and go other places. And they went out to Glen Burnie. And in doing so, we found out, and we got ready to talk about a revised edition, threw away our plates for our book. Well, if you're working in journalism at all, and you're involved in the library, and you know that if you have some very valuable plates, that all you have to do is take the printer and say, hey, run these for us, and then somebody has destroyed them, there's little or no way you can go back and to do that without, they call it reshooting. You have to photograph the pages and all this. It's very expensive. We were very unhappy about it because we were kind of excited. We were going to add some pages. We were going to put in some more watercolors, some newer research that I had done on the railroad, and I thought it would be nice to include that. We thought that in our original book we should have had a little cartoon-type sketch of where the railroad ran, the station, so that people could look at that little sketch and they could see where the track ran. So I had made such a sketch, and we were both excited about the fact that we would do this. And then when they threw the plates away, it was obvious immediately that it was a lost cause, because we could not go back and recover the original watercolors. I'd sold many of them, and you need those to make new plates. And it was just too expensive. And we felt that maybe sales wouldn't warrant I mean, the small sales wouldn't want the cost of redoing the whole thing, so we didn't do it. That was one of the minuses as far as the book went. We are asked from time to time if we ever thought about doing it, but I really told you that. I really think that maybe it was a blessing in disguise. Maybe we wouldn't have been able to sell them. I don't know. We probably could have sold some, but I don't know. And the reason you mention that is because if you don't sell them, then you have a lot of books stacked up in the corner. Now, of course, you don't have that. So hang on to what you have if you like it, because that's it.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, okay.